Greetings, my little oddities. Welcome to Odd Tuesdays. This is Monica Caraway from Small Biz Thoughts. Today, Carl is joined by David Sims, who runs the HIPAA for MSPs website. We are also joined by Computer Walla, Bob Nitrio, in our Oddball segment, and I'll be sharing some tech news brought to you by neowin.net. First up, upcoming tech events happening around the place. On January 14th at 9 a.m., you don't want to miss Carl's 6th annual State of the Nation address. Registration is free. Go to bit.ly/State of the Union 2015 to register. The Core Standard Operating Procedures for Small IT Providers online course begins January 13th. Please check out greatlittleseminar.com/courses2015 for the details. The Making Money with Hybrid Cloud Opportunities and Zinstra webinar is on January 15th and again on January 22nd and the 29th. They are all at 9 a.m. Pacific. Registration is free. Please visit bit.ly/2015hybridcloud to register. The SMB Tech Fest is on in Anaheim, California, January 22nd to the 23rd. More information can be found at smbtechfest.com/events. The Globalization of SMB webinar is on with Harry Brelsford and Carl, January 27th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Registration is free. Go to bit.ly/globalSMB to register. The IMB Connected event is on January 25th to the 28th in Orlando. For details, visit bit.ly/IBM Connected. And the SMB Nation Office 365 Tour is on January 27th in Bellevue, Washington, and on January 29th in the Silicon Valley. More information can be found at http://o365tour.smbnation.com. And now let's hand off to Carl and David Sims.
Hi, I'm joined now by David Sims from HIPAA for MSPs.com. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for having me.
So David runs a great little site called HIPAA for MSPs.com. And you started out doing the whole break-fix and then MSP, and now you've moved on from there. So tell us a little bit about the history of HIPAA for MSPs.com.
Okay. First, I guess I would say I've not really moved on. I still have an MSP in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, and I don't see that going anywhere. But what I did is I added another business to the things that I do, and really it's kind of born out of finding a need or a problem in the market that I wanted to address. And what that was is whenever I got my HIPAA compliance done, I had a hard time, first of all, trying to find HIPAA compliance as it pertained to an IT professional. There's a lot of training out there that deals with covered entities and business associates in general, but finding something that's really geared toward an IT person is not easy to find. And even more important, once I got my compliance done and I was out there in the marketplace and trying to sell my services and all that, I found I had very little time to do a lot of the other things that I needed to do, which was keeping up with the training, keeping up with what was going on out there in the what I call the HIPAA sphere, and looking at these different breaches that are happening and why are they happening, and keeping up with other people in the marketplace. There was just a lot of information. You know, HIPAA's got some things that are being clarified and changed from time to time, and it was a lot. It was overwhelming in every step of the way. It was overwhelming in getting started, and then once I got started, it was overwhelming trying to keep up with it. And so I wanted to address that with HIPAA for MSPs.com and bring a resource to the market where MSPs could come in and get access to all that information, get access to all that help, and find a resource that would help them take their business to the next level within the healthcare niche.
Nice. So this is way more than just MSPs talking to MSPs, though. You've got other resources, so it's beyond what I would get if I went to a forum full of MSPs and said, hey, who's doing HIPAA, and has anybody got a sample agreement?
Right, it is. And what I found out early on is when I was doing some market research and asking some questions, it was kind of funny because I would ask a question about, you know, what are some things you're struggling with in your business? And, you know, I was coming at it from the angle of HIPAA compliance, but the answers I was getting was, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to price my plans. I'm trying to figure out, do I need to incorporate my business? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with HIPAA compliance. But what I realized is that IT providers, especially MSPs, are finding out that they're good at IT, but they're not so good at business, and they're really searching for business answers a lot of times. So, you know, while I was building this resource, I decided that, you know what, let's make it different than every other resource out there. Let's make it something that's very holistic. So we're not just dealing with HIPAA, we're not just dealing with IT, but we're dealing with their business as a whole. So in doing that, I brought in people that deal with healthcare legal aspects, like a lawyer. I brought in an insurance guy for, you know, speaking about business insurance and cyber liability. Brought in an accountant to talk about taxes and investing. I brought in a guy for marketing and sales, and, you know, an MSP guru. And a lot of these are names out there in the marketplace that you probably know. These are some people that do a lot of blog posts and written books in the MSP market. So these are some big time people. And so we brought all these people in, and as a member of HIPAAForMSPs.com, you have access to that resource, to all of that information and that knowledge and those people. So you get a full, well-rounded approach to your business.
Very nice. And so tell us a little bit about the site. So you got like three different programs, and mm-hmm. That's probably the best place for people to get started to find out is HIPAAForMSPs.com.
Right. Yep. If you go to the site, there's three different levels, and I'll tell you that 99.8% of the people who join at the professional level, just because the value's there. That's where they get access to every single thing on the website, including our advisory team that I just spoke of. And so they take advantage of that. We have a few people that will jump in on the lower level just to kind of get an idea of what's going on and test things out. But what I like to tell people is jump in on that higher level. Take a look around. There's no terms that you have to agree to as far as a time commitment. So if you only want to get in there for 1 month and leave, you can do that. If you get in there and you've only been there a few days and you decided that, you know, for some reason it was misrepresented, and you want your money back, then we have a 30-day refund policy as well. But I'll tell you that we just don't get people asking for refunds. As a matter of fact, we had one guy who came into the site and sent me an email within probably the first week he was a member, and he said, David, I just want to let you know that I'm not going to be renewing my membership at the end of this month, but the reason why I'm not going to renew it is because I've looked around at what you have. Your website is awesome. The material is great, but I realize now that I do not want to be involved in HIPAA or healthcare, and you can keep my money, but I realize I don't want to get involved in this, which I thought was awesome. I mean, that he was able to answer a question about whether or not he wanted to take his business down this particular path for $49. I mean, that's a great value for him.
Exactly. Well, and sometimes that's the legitimate, you know, conclusion to come to is, man, I don't want my business to go down that road. So,
right. Yeah. And it's something that we deal with a lot too. There's a lot of liability involved in this. It's not easy. If it were easy, there would be a lot more people jumping in there trying to do it, but there's not. There's a lot of liability involved. And, I tell MSPs all the time, you either need to get all in or get all out. You can't just kind of get your feet wet when it comes to HIPAA and dealing with healthcare, because the fines are fairly substantial, and
right,
you don't want to be involved with that.
Exactly. So last thing I want to touch on is the LinkedIn group. You have a private LinkedIn group for certain members, and what's the advantage of that versus like public forums where, you know, I could go today and find 10 public forums where people are talking about HIPAA.
Right. The difference there is that within the private community or LinkedIn group, you have access to all the other members that are professional members. You also have access to our team that we just talked about earlier. And so in doing that, you can collaborate with other people. You can talk about whether it's HIPAA, whether it's about your business, but you're dealing with people who are trying to do the exact same things you're doing, or they're doing what you're doing. And so you get that personal one-on-one help with people that are trying to accomplish the same things that you're trying to accomplish. And I think the thing that makes it vastly different from your normal groups that you could join on LinkedIn or Facebook groups or anything like that is that our members really treat this more like a mastermind type group where they can get in and really talk to people that can help them out in their business. It's not just a bunch of people arguing about HIPAA compliance or arguing about, you know, things they do or don't like about their business or whatever, but these are people that genuinely want to help each other. And we can do a whole lot more together helping each other out than we can if we're, you know, trying to keep everything close to the chest and we don't want to deal with other MSPs. And so I think that kind of breeds that type of collaboration within that group.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today, and we encourage folks to head over to HIPAA4MSPs.com and take a look.
Great. Thanks.
And now for today's Oddball segment, we are joined by ComputerWalla Bob Nitrio to discuss business continuity and disaster recovery.
Hi, this is Bob Nitrio, and in this Oddball segment, I'd like to talk a little bit about business continuity and disaster recovery. Large companies have many resources that they can bring to bear in order to maintain business continuity in the face of disaster. Small businesses, on the other hand, often struggle just to maintain their competitive advantage in their market. In terms of the E-Myth Revisited, they spend all their time working in their business and not on their business. That's where we as business IT consultants need to take the lead to make sure that our clients are being well advised in this regard. I want to share with you three specific things that I do on behalf of my clients that promotes business continuity without expending a great deal of money in the process. These things also provide a path for disaster recovery, each in a slightly different way. Like most of us who supported Small Business Server for many years, I've migrated most of my small business clients to Windows Server Essentials. In this first example, I received a call from a client a couple weeks back, and she told me that she was unable to open up any of her documents. When I asked her what she meant by that, she said, well, they just weren't looking correct when she tried to click on one of them. I dug in remotely and found that the documents were actually encrypted, and that's why they looked so odd. And naturally, the first thing I thought about was CryptoLocker. After a bit of investigation, I was able to determine that I was dealing with CryptoWall and not CryptoLocker. In this particular case, the client's hosted business application for property management also served as the repository for their essential business data. So this was a big plus. The second plus they had is that their team documents are in SharePoint online as part of their Office 365 Enterprise subscriptions. My plan of attack was very simple. I purchased a new hard drive for their Lenovo all-in-one computer, removed the existing drive, put the new drive in place, connected to the server, and selected the computer in question to be recovered to a specific point in time, namely Friday from the week before. All of this actually worked quite well, and in about 1 hour, the system was completely restored to where she was prior to getting this drive-by attack. The only other thing that had to be done was for her Exchange account to update her mailbox from Friday of the previous week to the Tuesday in question. All the documents that she created were stored in SharePoint and not lost, and of course, all of the data that she produced in her line of business application was still hosted in the cloud, without any interruption whatsoever. This was a huge success, but I also have another solution that actually works even faster than the recovery of a hard drive via Essential Server Imaging. Centurion Software in the St. Louis, Missouri area has a product called SmartShield. SmartShield is a utility program that allows you to lock down a computer at a certain known good state while allowing the data files and data storage areas to increment over time. Each time you reboot, the system is automatically restored to that lockdown point in time, while your client, during the course of each day, works effectively in a sandbox. What this allows us to do, of course, is to empower the computer users who are attacked by drive-by malware downloads to simply reboot the computer and be back in business in no time at all. The cost for SmartShield is as low as $40 per year, including Authenticum antivirus. The program is able to go out and refresh the antivirus definitions automatically because it's built into the product. The beauty of the program is that we don't have to actually try to delouse a system after it's gotten infected severely. We just have to reboot it. The cost advantage for the client is significant, and it allows us to spend our time doing more important things. If you're not familiar with SmartShield, I urge you to do so at your earliest convenience because it can save you and your clients a great deal of time and money. My last tip is a little utility program called Easy Recovery Essentials from neosmart.net. A few months back, when I configured a new Windows 8 system for my office, I found that it wouldn't boot at one point. I really didn't want to have to rebuild the system from scratch again, so I did some research, and a Microsoft KB article actually pointed me to this company. All you do is run the program from a CD, and it will help you fix blue screen issues, registry failures, bootloader issues, disk corruptions, virus infections, and a whole lot more. It's saved me a whole lot of time, and I'm sure it can help you as well. So there you have three quick, easy, and cost-effective ways to provide business continuity and disaster recovery for the SMB clients that we serve. I hope you find this useful, and I'll look forward to speaking to you next time on The Oddballs.
Now for today's tech news, brought to you by neowin.net. Recently, Google confirmed to a number of outlets that YouTube will soon be able to support 360-degree videos. This means that users of all those new cameras that keep coming on the market will finally have a way to share their footage with the whole world. There's no exact date on when the feature will roll out, besides a vague coming weeks mentioned by a spokesperson. YouTube has also been noted as recently experimenting with video autoplay and gift sharing, features aimed at retaining viewers and helping viewers get other viewers interested in content. Chromecast was a really disruptive gadget in the sea of media players. It took away the hassle of dealing with wires and allowed a user to stream media straight from their phone onto a TV, all for an extremely low price tag. Google continues to see the potential in such a device, probably because it is so cheap to produce, and have now expanded the technology into speakers and AV receivers. Provider a user owns a GoogleCast Ready audio system, streaming audio will work exactly the same way as streaming media to the Chromecast, and it appears that it will immediately support all of the audio apps that are already supported by GoogleCast, including Deezer, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, NPR One, Pandora, Radio, TuneIn, among others, out of the box. Google mentions that leading brands like Sony and LG are already producing GoogleCast Ready speakers, which should be available with more products being released shortly after. Among the chip makers who will be producing the hardware, they've already got support from Broadcom, Marvel, and MediaTek. The last one of the three is the most interesting because it means we're likely to see the Chinese market explode with various supported products, including most likely a super cheap GoogleCast for audio dongle that can plug into any 3.5mm or optical port. From mid-January, Kickstarter, the world's largest funding platform for creative projects, will no longer use Amazon Payments to process payments, ending a partnership that goes back to the launch of Kickstarter. Instead, it will use Stripe. In a recent blog post, Kickstarter announced the change, which will be greatly welcomed by creators and backers who have had to suffer through the painful process that is receiving and making payments via Amazon Payments. Project creators will no longer need to create an Amazon Payments business account to receive funds, a process that Kickstarter said could take a few days. Instead, entering bank details is all that will be needed. Backers also don't have to leave the website or create another account. Kickstarter said it made the change because Amazon decided to discontinue the payments product that it used, but it said Amazon has been an excellent partner processing over $1 billion in pledges. It said it took the opportunity to consider the best possible partner, and after careful consideration, decided on Stripe. Stripe also processes payments for Twitter, Facebook, and Apple Pay. Nest Labs has been growing very quickly since its acquisition by Google back in February 2014. Founded by former Apple engineers Tony Fadell and Matt Rogers in 2010, the Palo Alto company is hard at work to become the core of your smart home. Nest is continuing the battle for domination in the smart home market by adding 15 new partners to its Works with Nest developer program. The strategy is to turn the Nest thermostat and the Protect alarm into the central hub for all the smart devices in your home, including those made by big names like LG and Philips. If you come home after a hard day at work, the automatic driving assistant will be able to tell Nest to heat your home, and your LG fridge and Whirlpool washing machine would go into a quiet mode. Nest Protect could set the Philips Hue lights to glow red when it needs to signal an emergency. If you have Zuli smart plugs, smart appliances will enter energy saving mode when you're not around, and you'll be able to track power usage around your home. Nest says that 1 in 10 customers uses its Works with Nest platform to some degree, which is a sign that at least some people out there want to have a more connected smart home. However, the technology needs to become safer and have better privacy protection in order to stimulate its adoption. Later this year, Microsoft will be releasing Windows 10, and if you're running an older version of Windows, you need to be aware that to make the jump to the new OS, a clean install will be required. Well, not a total surprise for Windows XP users, this holds true for Windows Vista users as well. That's the word from the Windows Insider Program team, with the only upgrade path supported set to be Windows 7 and newer. This should not come as a huge surprise when you look at the desktop OS market share. For starters, Windows XP is no longer a supported platform, and Microsoft has left those bits far behind. Even though the OS still holds an 18% share of desktop market according to Net Applications for the month of December, Microsoft is not willing to make the transition easier since the OS is over a decade old, which will require a significant amount of work to make this upgrade possible. And then you have Vista, with only 2.9% of the market. The user base is quite small when compared to Windows 7 and Windows 8 and 8.1, which is likely why Microsoft is passing over the OS when it comes to a smooth upgrade path. Microsoft has not officially said when Windows 10 will be released. They are set to hold an event later in the month where consumer features coming with the new OS will be unveiled. Kodak, the popular photography brand that filed for bankruptcy back in 2012, has announced this month the launch of the Kodak IM5 Android smartphone. Bearing the Kodak name, one would expect special imaging features from this newly unveiled smartphone. The Kodak IM5 addresses this as the central appeal of the handset. The new Kodak phone is packed with a 13-megapixel autofocus main camera, which contains an image management software unique to the phone. With a touch of a button, the program lets users edit photos quickly, and then the user can either choose to display them on the phone, share them on social media, or print via a customized app for home printers, including future printing and sharing services. The device also comes with an advanced remote management software that allows trusted people to send help if necessary via a PC or a tablet. The device is aimed at consumers who want a smartphone that is easier to use. Elaine Murphy, the vice president for brand licensing at Kodak, emphasizes, "Too many memories stay stuck on mobile phones, often because the process for sharing them is too complicated for users. That's why we've partnered on the IM5, the first device in a range of mobile products that takes our heritage and experience in photographic technology and combines it with Bullitt's expertise in designing high-quality devices for a specific target consumer." The Kodak IM5 is available in either white or black. It can be seen at the CES 2015 and at the Pepcom Digital Experience event. Regarding its availability, it will soon roll out globally, starting with Europe, by the end of Q1 this year. A new patent shows that Apple is experimenting with eye devices that are flexible. Apple has probably learned a valuable lesson thanks to the Bendgate phenomenon last year, and may be thinking about following the trend of curved and flexible devices. Just recently, the company has been granted a U.S. patent for flexible electronic devices. In the document, the Cupertino giant shows a portable device that looks like an iPhone and is able to withstand flexing, folding, and bending to a great degree without suffering internal damage to the components by using rigid flex-printed circuit boards and flexible housing. The filing suggests Apple could use plastic, thin glass, fiber composites, thin metal, fabric, and silicon to manufacture a more durable and rugged eye device. One interesting part is when it mentions that the device may be able to respond to gestures such as bending the device or squeezing it, allowing for rich interaction. Apple may not use these patents to create an exotic new iPhone, but this does indicate that the company is looking to bring more innovation into its future mobile devices. With Samsung preparing to release a flexible phone in 2015 and LG's recent announcement of the G Flex 2, the trend for curved and bendable handsets is slowly taking shape. HP is doing something interesting, and that it's competing with itself in an effort to be everywhere and support everything its customers want. As part of that effort, Hewlett-Packard has just unveiled a pair of tiny Windows PCs to take on Chromebooks. The first of these mini PCs is the Stream Mini, coming from the same family as the company's brightly colored Stream 11 laptop. Just like its mobile counterpart, the Stream Mini is brightly colored and affordably priced at $180. The Stream Mini comes in a tiny and light package that's also supposed to be silent and very cool, using only 45 watts of power. On the outside, there's four USB ports alongside an HDMI and a display port. On the inside, you'll find an entry-level Intel Celeron processor alongside 2 GB of RAM. When it comes to storage, the Stream Mini is a bit lacking, having only 32 GB of internal memory. However, HP is throwing 200 GB of OneDrive storage for free for 2 years, which, provided you have a good internet connection, may be all your storage you need. Next up is the slightly more stylish Pavilion Mini. Though it follows the same general design principles as the Stream, the Pavilion comes in a better-looking package and with a bigger price tag, $320. Looks aren't everything, as the Pavilion also brings more powerful internals, such as a Pentium CPU, 4 GB of RAM, and 500 GB of storage, though you lose the OneDrive storage that was bundled with the Stream. Both of these devices are set to go on sale mid-January. I'd like to thank neowin.net for today's tech news. The 2015 online class signups over at Great Little Seminar are filling up. There are 10 courses, each running for 5 weeks and are live on Tuesday mornings. And recordings and materials are made available to students who cannot attend live. Our instructors this year include, of course, Carl and MSP coach Manuel Polichuk, and QuickBooks for MSPs guru Rayanne Buccianico. Please go to greatlittleseminar.com to see what is on offer. And Odd Tuesdays listeners can register for any classes at a discount by using the Odd Tuesdays show coupon on checkout. That's one word, Odd Tuesdays. That will give you 20% off on any course fees. Don't forget, if you are not already connected to Carl's weekly newsletter, chocked full of MSP resources, blog article links, and more, just visit carlsnews.com to connect. That's carlsnews.com. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us in our next episode on January 20th. That will mark the 1-year anniversary of our show. I look forward to having you join us. Take care.